This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
Well, my name's Andrew. I'm 38 on Sunday, and I identify as gay. When I say that, on a Kinsey scale, I think 6 is exclusively homosexual. I'd say I'm like 5, 5.5. So it's not like total gold star, but yeah. I was born and raised in Sydney. So very privileged in that sense. Grew up in the southeastern suburbs. My sort of like the Maroubra, Kingsford sort of area. I don't know if you're familiar with Sydney, but that's sort of close to Coogee Beach and the domestic airport and all that sort of area. So so I was used to like having a corner shop around, you know, access to cafes, access to things. We didn't have to drive long distances to get to stuff. You could walk down the road and get to a cafe or a restaurant or whatever it might be. So I'm one of two. I've got an older sibling, she works in finance. She's completely different to me, both physically and personality. She's fair-skinned and naturally blonde. I've got creative endeavors and I tend to sort of wing my way through life. And she's very cookie cutter and, you know, working into finance, doesn't do art or music or anything like that, and just completely, you know, married, 2 kids, doesn't go out after 9. She should be in Melbourne because the curfew would suit her. Four years older, so I grew up, you know, being a gay man, I grew up sort of following a lot of her music and being a late adopter of stuff that she was into, and then she was never a huge fan, so she would watch Sex and the City and then not stick to it, whereas I just became like this fanboy of Carrie and her friends and everything. So I kind of adopted a lot of my sister's tastes in music. So really strangely, for an 82 baby, I should like late 90s music, but I love Cyndi Lauper and I love the 80s and everything about it. Parents were very different people, but still together. They're a generation where they just made it work, and it wasn't always easy, but they got through and they depend on each other more than anything. My sister used to be quite protective of me, and she was the responsible one. So, you know, I'd forget my keys because she'd remember them. And I was very cheeky like that. I was very slack. I was very lazy. And I was, you know, as I got into my teenage years, I started to become quite vocal, particularly in my late teens when I entered uni, like at 19, and became an activist and, you know, started ramming left-wing propaganda down everyone's throat and just like, rah, 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 this, and, you know, just whether they wanted to hear it or not, they were going to hear it. And you learn as you get older that there's a more balanced way to deal with that sort of stuff. I'm going to say around puberty. It's interesting because I do remember, and I see photos of when I was really little and sort of holding my sister's dolls and stuff, and I remember not liking trucks or cars or anything. I don't think that was so much of a gender thing because I did have a big thing for dinosaurs and zoo animals and stuff like that. So there was just a different approach to being a boy as such, but trucks and cars, not me. Probably prepubescent, I used to steal my sister's Cleo magazines and her Cosmos, and then take the sealed section and hope that she didn't notice. You've always been there. You know, I don't think that's a gay thing. I think that's like a, you know, any access to anything related, remotely sexual, is puberty related. But I did notice I was looking at the guys. So a lot of sort of heterosexual porn or soft porn or whatever, and, you know, looking at the men in the photos and stuff like that. I had a gay uncle in New Zealand, but I don't remember him. I can't even tell you what he looks like. I haven't really connected with him, but I was constantly told about him, and told that he went through some aversion therapy in New Zealand, which was very unpleasant. That's my dad's half brother, and it was kind of scary to think that something like that can happen. I went to see my school counselor, and she referred me to Exodus, which is a exorcism, they exorcise your gayness. It's like a Catholic organization in the US. I didn't do that, obviously, but it was, I just didn't think a lot of people knew a lot about it or how to deal with it. And I think she latched on to, you know, I said my mum's Catholic, and she went, right, okay, you're gonna get some Catholic advice. And it's like, well, you should probably check that advice before you give it out to people. So I think it was well-intentioned, but dangerous.
Yeah.
I used to try and take the long route home from school so that I could walk up Oxford Street and then go into the news agency and, like, just have a look at the magazines, but be too scared to actually buy it with my pocket money. But yeah, just kind of hoping that I could just, like, slowly walk my way into the gay scene. My first introduction to gay people as friends were through the queer collective at uni. So very socialist, very left-wing, very angry people. I understand that anger, but you know, there's a certain type. They're my sort of grassroots, and so I only really learned that was the way to be, was to fight for a cause and to be really angry about the injustice in the world. I came out when I was 19. So the way that happened was the collective had decided that they were going to go in the Mardi Gras, and they're like, you should come along. And I'm like, yeah, cool. And I wasn't aware that it didn't screen live. So I thought, oh crap, what if my parents watch it? I'm going to have to come out tonight. So my mum had already gone to bed, and I came out to my dad. He took it really, really well. And then I found out later it was going to be recorded and everything, and they might not even film my part and all that kind of stuff. But I told him not to tell mum, and he couldn't help himself because, you know, it's my mum and it's his wife. And she got really cold with me that week. And so I just hit the nail, and like, I just hit it between the eyes and said, are we going to talk about this? And he's just like, talk about what? And it got really, like, hard. It got really hard because she started saying things like, don't tell my family about this. They don't want to know that you're homosexual. No one wants to know this about you. What can I do? You know, I still accept you. You're still my son, but I don't like it. And I don't want to see or know about it. My mum's a very secretive woman, and I don't know much about her. And it's troubling for me, but there's a lot of secrets there in my Mauritian heritage that I'm trying to uncover, but I can't because questions get shut down very quickly. I was deliberately not taught French Creole to think of myself as Australian. It's tough because I want to connect with my culture. But to bring it back to your question about my relationship with my mum, so because of that, I find it hard to connect because I'm clearly a talker. Because you hadn't noticed. And that's been tough. My dad's a talker too. My dad's given me most of what I know about my mum. but you don't know how much of that is through a lens of what he's been told.
What's your relationship like now?
Yeah, my mum's really awesome. I love it a bit. She's still the same woman. She's still very secretive. She'd have a fit if she knew I was doing this. But I also wouldn't care. She's supportive of me. And she doesn't... I still get the feeling she doesn't approve of what my life decisions are, whatever they might be. But she accepts that I'm going to make them anyway. And, you know, we have a very warm mother-son relationship. We call each other often. She's very concerned about me being in Melbourne. You know, there's a lot of concern going around. Yeah, she constantly touches base and she knows I suffer depression. So she's like, you know, if you ever need to talk, we're here. And I'm like, cool, thanks, Mum. You're not the right person to talk to, but sure. Like, yeah.
You came out to your dad. Was he the first person that you told?
No. I told someone in year 9 at school and thought it was in confidence, and then they spread it around the whole school. So I came back the next day and it was just like, I had a really awful school experience. Tripped in hallways, awful phrases, told I should kill myself. You know, I don't think I'm alone there. I think a lot of people suffer that. You know, I'm not unique by any standards, but I do think it's really painful regardless, because at that point in your time in your life, despite everyone going through the same experience, if they, you know, have that, if they're gay, they don't know about other gay people as much. And we're talking back in the late 90s, right? So you don't know, you don't think anyone else in your year is gay. You think you're the only one. You're being treated poorly because you were the one that outed yourself. Everyone who's now gay will not out themselves because they can see how you're being treated. And it just makes you the poster boy for being bullied. Like, it's pretty tough. So I didn't like that I was pushed into the deep end like that. Yeah, so I went straight to uni, queer collective. I tried to latch on to every cute guy I thought was cute, because I thought that's what you did. Like, you found a boyfriend. So you tried to make... If anyone talked to me, I considered it to be flirting. It's like, hello, oh, you want to go out with me? like, not quite how it works, but sure. But yeah, it's... It was tough because I feel like, you know, when you move around lefty activist circles, you almost get told what to think. And I, don't get me wrong, I'm still very left wing and I still believe in a lot of those things, but I have a much more critical approach to what I hear on the news and what I read about and what I think about in life. And I don't just digest things because I'm told to believe them. Whereas when you're young and impressionable, you want to be accepted. So the way to be accepted is to fit in. And if they're all shouting about some cause, then you shout it too. I have to say, as people get a little bit more mature, I mean, look, I've had the people on the streets and stuff like that do it. It's so common now that I couldn't really even single out one incident for you. Thankfully, I've never been a victim of a hate crime. I have experienced violence in intimate relationships and things like that, which that's a different story. But in terms of discrimination, I think it's more, you know, back in the early noughties when you're working, people used to ask you things like, you know, okay, so have you got a girlfriend and blah, blah, blah. Because over time, you kind of let your hair down, you become a little bit more, if you self-monitor and then you relax yourself and you can become a bit more flamboyant, a bit more camp, and people start to assume it, which has its own issues, which we'll touch on if we go there. But it's mostly those little like lines of, oh, you know, because, you know, how does it feel that you've had a, like, you'd be at a party. How does it feel that you've, you know, you've got this birth defect? And I'm like, excuse me? And they just, I don't think they're conscious of what they're saying, but they're just speaking in a really candid fashion about ideas and not realizing the damage or the hurt that they're creating or the triggers that they're doing. Yeah. Every guy I met wanted to be my boyfriend. Well, I wanted them to be my boyfriend, rather, you know. I got a lot of heartbreak early because it was one shag and it's all over. And it was just, you know, you're trying to work your way out. And then I met this one guy and he was really sweet. But about 6 months in, and I don't really want to talk about it too much, but... I will say it became very violent, very fast, and he's since apologized, and that's really nice because it's given me closure. I responded with a, thanks so much, I still don't want to know anything about you or hear from you, but thank you, I really appreciate that you felt the need to do that. But it was really scary for me, and it's really scary when you're gay because you can't talk to anyone about it. So despite having come out to both my parents, they didn't know about my relationships because my mum didn't want to hear about it. So you suffer it in silence, and you're embarrassed to talk about it. And I didn't have a great deal of friends. So this happened when I'd already dropped out of uni. So I didn't have many friends, and it was really tough to go through. I had to kind of rely on my own survival instincts. But I got out of it and I flourished, and relationships don't always work out. So, you know, I've had a string of relationships, but I'm not in the business of blaming people for why things don't work out, other than if you're, you know, violent or something. But, I think when a relationship ends, it's two people that curate that, the ending of that relationship.
Yeah, for sure.
I've had an 8-year relationship in Sydney. So met him when I was 27, left the relationship when I was 35. It didn't work out for a reason, but, you know, that reason's mine. Yeah.
Do you feel like your sexuality has ever stopped you from taking an opportunity or doing something that you've wanted to do?
It's a really hard one to answer. Yes. Not work-wise. You know, I originally joined the Sydney Silverbacks Wrestling Club in Sydney, and mainly because I thought, I can't wrestle. Like, what is this shit? I can't do this. So I gave it a go anyway, and I went to prove myself wrong that I could wrestle. And it's hard work, and I got my ass handed to me. But I worked hard at it, on, off, you know, muscle soreness, all that kind of stuff that just made me go, I'm not going back. Moved to Melbourne, joined the Melbourne Wranglers. That became my family. That became my Melbourne family of friends that I just kept going back, and I love them to bits, and I have been on their committee to volunteer because I just feel like I owe it to them. But I've competed in tournaments where we've done like a, it's kind of like the Ashes, like we do a Melbourne Wranglers versus Sydney Silverbacks. And I've won bronze, so I've done all right. But our coach was recommending that we go into like sort of the more serious, like Australia Cup tournaments and stuff like that. And I'd say that I was starting to train for that. But I was really apprehensive about it because the Melbourne Wranglers is a diverse gender sexuality club. So it's very inclusive, and it doesn't have that macho-ness that can get really scary really fast. So I feel like when I'm around a lot of toxic masculinity, God, that's a loaded term, it's a bit triggering for me. I feel like they're gonna make the match personal. And for a combat sport, that's really terrifying. Yeah, so I work to expand surgical training capacity in non-traditional settings, which just means like rural mostly and some private settings, but mostly rural Australia. And that's a very rewarding job. I've been a course developer. I've been a primary school teacher briefly, very briefly. Thought I was going to do a career change, but it didn't work out. Yeah, I wrestle when I'm not restricted by COVID-19. I love it. I absolutely adore wrestling. It's my life. But what I've been able to do too is life drawing and painting, which really is quite strange for me, because not strange in the sense I've always been artistic, but strange because I'm a mad extrovert and it's a very introverted activity. But they've been really great at like holding Zoom sessions and stuff. So yeah, I love creating things. I think that's why I started the blog. I've got a lot of creative energy and I love producing things. My best friend and I years ago decided that we were going to start an application to go on My Kitchen Rules. And that didn't work out because her mum talked her out of it. But I love everything about sort of inventing things or being creative or plating up a dish or whatever it might be. Like, it's fun. And I love experimenting. I do that with my art a lot too. So if I'm not comfortable with a medium, I try and shift to it to see what will happen. Yeah, just want to sort of stay active and engaged in things. And that's been really helpful through isolation.
What is the COVID situation in Melbourne at the moment?
Oh, it's terrible. Stage 4 lockdown. We have to wear masks everywhere. So naturally I got like a few masks. I've got a Tom of Finland mask just to be cheeky, but I also got an X-Men mask because I love the X-Men. Grew up on it, and you know, I've got, what else have I got? Cyndi Lauper one as well. Yeah. If we're going to go for a run, I'm going to be gay doing it. So they had stage 3 back in July. A whole lot of new cases happened and it got really serious. And I don't know if you've watched much of the news on it. A lot of people stay away from the news for obvious reasons. But there was a whole incident with the nursing home and the quarantine hotel. And they moved to stage 4. So now it's quite indefinite. And Dan Andrews is using the analogy that... it's like when you parachute, as you slow down towards the end, you don't get rid of the parachute, you keep the parachute on. So we need to keep a lot of the restrictions in place so that we can get through this unscathed. We can't make any preliminary, you know, let's go out, cool, it's gone, you know, which I think is actually really sensible. And I know there's a lot of debate about him at the moment. I think he's done an awesome job.
How are you coping with the isolation?
Up and down. Lots of bubble baths. I have quite a thirsty Instagram. it's whatever keeps me sane. Hey, like,
yeah.
And it's not always easy. Like I can vouch for, I can look over and see that my decanter is almost empty. Yeah, a lot of nights drinking scotch. Did dry July to try and break it, but then I just had a very wet August.
How do you think that the COVID isolation, not just in Melbourne, but across Australia, is impacting the LGBT community?
Yeah, it's tough. I'm not involved in the community side of it as much, like in terms of not-for-profit and volunteering and that as anymore. It is quite hard on singles and those in open relationships, although I have opinions there that are probably not welcome to everyone, so I won't go there. But for people who are missing intimacy and missing the ability to be intimate with other people, but also I think that, you know, we know LGBT people suffer depression and mental health problems at a greater rate than heterosexual or cisgendered people. I think that when you put them in lockdown and you put all those issues on top of them and you remove their friendships away from them, it makes it really hard. Am I sympathetic towards it? Yes, I am. Do I think that special allowances or that something should change for them? No, I don't. Because I think I'd like to protect them and I'd like to protect everyone. So, yeah. So important, and it'll always be important. And it's not now, it's always. And I have these conversations with people who go, oh, look, I'm gay, but it's not the only thing about me and everything. And I'm like, not everything I do is gay, but my sexuality is absolutely behind the driver's seat. Like, it's when you've had to fight so hard to have your identity recognized and have it appreciated and respected and feel empowered by it, I think it's really rich or really easy to say to someone, oh, but you know, don't have to make everything about being gay. It's like, well, you know, like, you don't know my life. You don't know my experience. You don't know why I would feel threatened by a straight man in a wrestling singlet. Because you don't know how I was beaten up at school. Like, you don't know those things, and you can't expect me to just like go flip a switch and go, yeah, cool. I'm just gonna live like a straight person, except I'm gay. Cause like, I get it for some people, but that's just not gonna happen. Doesn't mean I have to go to raves every night. No, it doesn't. Does it mean I can enjoy a rave? Hell yeah. But you know, I like at work, I say this thing to someone where I was like, not that kind of gay. If they say something that like, do you want pom poms on your desk? And I'm like, phew. Then listen to Cyndi Lauper. Oh yeah, I'm that kind of gay. And the point I really want to drive across is don't put me in any box. Like, so I'll be both and confuse you. And do you get it yet? Like, yeah.
When I was flicking through your blog, one of the headings made reference to cubs and otters and sort of those gay tribes. Do you identify in a tribe? Do you feel like gay tribes are something that still matter to people?
I think for some groups it does. Some groups label, they're not really tribes. I think they just like label themselves an identity. So I don't think like twinks are a tribe. I think twink is something you look in the mirror and decide whether you are or not. That's my experience of talking to twinks. They don't hang out at twink parties. Whereas the bear community does have quite a unsaid definition of what they are. And I say unsaid because, you know, everyone thinks they know what a bear is, and then there's always one that goes, oh, no, we accept these as well. And, you know, we've got otters and pandas and all these different, like, wildlife. It's great. It's confusing, really. And I've always felt most welcome by the bear community, but it's a really odd one because I don't really fully fit into it. But then I do, and I don't, because they're all about body positivity. So it's like, you can look however you want and you can be a chaser. Guy next door, maybe? I don't know. Like, sometimes a jock when I'm competitive, not when I'm in isolation, definitely not. But, you know, it's an interesting one. Some tribes, and I'm not going to name any, some tribes have formed themselves out of trying to escape discrimination from other tribes or other identities, and then in doing so discriminate against them. And you know, like, I'm not labeling these names, I'm just going to throw them out there. Like, it might be like a bears only party or a twinks only party, and I'm like, what have you done there? Because you've created a group and then you've then given an exclusivity, which is exactly what you hated about the thing that you're trying to escape. So, yeah.
What was the marriage equality vote like for you? What was that experience like going through such public discussions of?
It angered me that the government was spending so much money on a stupid debate about, say, marriage equality when they should just... I have interesting views on marriage that haven't always been the same view. I think I used to have a friend that I agreed with that she'd say, I just don't think anyone should be allowed to get married. Marriage is a stupid institution. My view was that whatever the laws were, they needed to be equal for everyone. That was it. That's my view now. I was engaged at the time and then broke up with my fiance. So it was bittersweet to have a yes vote come through when they were my plans that didn't go through. So that was a really difficult time for me. And I don't think a lot of people appreciated. A lot of my straight ally friends were like, oh, you should be more like happy for the gay community. I'm like, fuck off. Like, sorry, I don't know if I could say that on podcast, but like, fuck off. Like, you want to talk about the cause? I am the cause. Like, fuck off. So, yeah, people don't understand a lot of the different experiences and where a lot of people's grief came from. Some people had to get divorces because their previously recognised marriages were now... unrecognised marriages were now recognised. And they're like, oh, I'm now married to my ex. I need to break that off. So it was an interesting time for a lot of people.
What about the religious freedom?
That's just bullshit, isn't it? Like, it's just bullshit. Like, you can believe what you want to believe, but that shouldn't dictate, that shouldn't transcend human rights. You know, everyone has the right to be serviced in this country, have access to the same things, have the same opportunities. And I don't know, I don't want to make sweeping generalizations. My experience of a lot of people who fall on Christianity as a defense is that they're not particularly good Christians. They're just homophobes who are using whatever excuse they can grasp at. Oh, I'm suddenly a Catholic. Oh, really? Never saw you at church, but great, because you want to be a homophobe. Like, yeah.
Does it, the thought of it being passed and made law, scare you at all?
Honestly, no. Like, I don't know if you've seen, like, Hannah Gatsby's Nanette, but, like, she's like, I identify as tired. She's like, everyone asks me how I identify. I was like, you know what I identify as? I'm tired. I'm like, I'm kind of getting to that point now. I'm just like, I can't fight anymore. I just got to live, and life's pretty good. Hey, like, you know, you just got to embrace it. I'll always challenge things that I don't agree with, but I'm done with getting angry over stuff that you can't control. I think it's not probably a good time to sort of tie up everything. And I just think that there's a lot of trauma in the world right now with COVID-19, but also Black Lives Matter, all the other issues. Me Too is still happening. It didn't just happen for a few months and then everyone forgot. Weinstein is not the only predator out there. You know, as many rights as LGBT people can get, we can still suffer a hate crime in an alley. Equal right, the law doesn't protect us from someone breaking it. So it's important that where we can, I think we need to be kind to one another and realize that everyone's just doing the best they can, hey, like, and allow each other to make mistakes. Don't allow other people, like, don't expect other people to be perfect. Yeah, I think if we're just all a little bit, I know it sounds cliche, but like just a little bit kinder to one another. Big thing about mental health. Don't ever ask me if I'm okay if you don't know what to do next if I say no. So Like, it's great that everyone wants to jump on, are you okay, Dave? But it's like, when I answer no and they go into shell shock, I'm like, well, what was the point of that? I'm sorry I didn't say yes, I'm fine. So I think what we can do is we can educate ourselves as well. Be brave. You will get through it. Don't do anything you don't want to do. If you don't want to come out, don't come out until you're ready. Make sure you have plenty of support around you. And make sure you're safe. And don't expect your experience to look like anyone else's. It's your experience, and don't apologize for it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
If you are struggling with your mental health, please contact Lifeline on 13 1114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to share your story, talk about your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man operation to produce, but you can support this podcast by following, donating, or subscribing to it at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. If you're listening in Northwest Tasmania and would like to be part of an LGBT plus community social and support group, search Facebook for Northwest Pride. In Tasmania, if you want support for sexuality, gender or intersex status, you can contact Working It Out on 03 6231 1200. Q Life provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referrals for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships, and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527 or web chat with them at qlife.com.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate, and review. It does really help. We will be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.